There seems to be a specialized area of knowledge for each symbol. My friends were all taught something important. What was I taught? I am a circle. There are more of us than any other group. What is it that we were born to do?
I could take Fisk and Baudin, Bishop says. They're fast like me. If we see the spider, we come back. Even if the spider catches one of us, two will return and share what we've learned.
He wants to take three because he knows a single person might not make it back. Is information more important than lives? I wonder what else the Circle Stars were taught when they were little.
Why not Coyotl and Farrar? O'Malley asks.
They went out before and made it back. Wouldn't you rather have their experience?
Bishop winces. Farrar didn't follow orders, and Coyotl is
noisy.
He looks at me.
You could move quieter than him, Em.
I could teach you. That's something I'd like to learn. For now, though, if I agree to Bishop's plan, that's three Circle Stars gone for a whole day. Spingate is right. A building with power is more important than the fire pit. I don't think we can risk sending additional people into the jungle. That will have to wait for tomorrow.
Go now, I say to Bishop. Be back by nightfall.
He turns and walks out.
I have work waiting in the lab, Spingate says.
Aramovsky snorts.
Work? Is that what you call it?
That's it. I've had enough of his crap.
Everyone out, I say.
Except you, Aramovsky. I want to talk to you. O'Malley's eyes widen. He wants to stay. He clearly thinks I need his help with this. I ignore his unspoken warning. I can take care of this myself. Spingate grabs Gaston's hand.
Come on, she says. I need your help in the lab.
Aramovsky crosses his arms, waits. O'Malley is still standing there.
I asked you to leave, I say.
He flashes Aramovsky a clear look of warning. Aramovsky pretends to yawn. O'Malley storms out. I follow him into the corridor, stop him at the shuttle door.
Wait, I say. You're acting strange. Is there something I should know?
We're alone. This is his chance to tell me that he already knew the observatory would have power, to tell me he knows about the symbols.
He shakes his head.
No.
Just be careful with Aramovsky. He's tricky.
O'Malley turns and walks into the coffin room.
Is he hiding information from me?
I'll have to find out soon. But first things first, it's time to deal with Aramovsky.
15.
I shut the pilot house door. I don't have the ability to lock it, but the others had to see how angry I am. Aramovsky and I won't be bothered. He smiles his fake smile.
Decided to do your own talking instead of having Bishop do it for you?
He doesn't talk for me. Aramovsky looks at his fingernails, checking them for dirt.
Bishop told me that I needed to stop arguing with you.
He looks me in the eyes. Or he would hurt me.
Is that true? I can't have Bishop threatening people, and I can't have him thinking he needs to fight my battles for me.
I'll talk to him about it. No one is allowed to threaten you for speaking your mind. We need everyone's ideas.
Funny. I was speaking my mind in the coffin room when I said the red mold is a punishment from the gods. You got in my face, brandishing your spear.
Tell me, Em, if Bishop hadn't taken me outside, would you have threatened me?
I don't think I would have. But I can't say for sure. I was furious.
If you want to talk about threats, let's talk about how you threatened Spingate.
I told you. All I did was repeat what the gods told me. Now he's pretending the gods speak directly to him.
The others might believe your lies, but not me.
I know what you said to Spingate, and I know what you're trying to do.
And what is that?
You want to be the leader.
He smiles again. This time it feels genuine, but also dismissive. The smile of an adult dealing with a child.
I want no such thing,
he says.
I merely want to give people guidance. I want us to be right with the gods.
You're going to stop doing things that hurt us.
I keep my tone level, but I know he hears me. This is his warning. That includes you stopping all this religion nonsense.
I expected that to rattle him, perhaps make him mad, but he seems more exhausted with me than angry.
You called it nonsense when we spoke at Latu's grave. Think of all the miracles we've seen since then, and yet you still don't believe in our destiny?
There are no miracles. We make our own destiny.
Aramovsky sighs and crosses his arms. You shouldn't fight religion. Religion helps guide your decisions, helps people follow those decisions. We're almost 300 souls now. You're struggling to make everyone obey.
The only people who don't obey are the ones listening to you. And we're almost 300 because you let those kids out.
He nods. I did. Because it was the right thing to do. Keeping them in their coffins because it is convenient for us would make us no better than the grown-ups.
That takes me by surprise, crushes my anger. I hadn't thought about it that way. I never, ever want to be compared to Matilda and her kind.
Maybe you have a point.
Thank you, he says.
But I didn't come to that decision on my own. I was guided to it.
He pauses, thinking carefully about his next words.
Let me help you, Em. The gods want to guide you.
I can be their voice.
Of course. With Aramovsky, it always comes back to power. I don't need anyone's voice to guide me.
His eyebrows rise.
Oh? Then maybe I don't understand what O'Malley is doing when he whispers in your ear.
My face flushes hot.
O'Malley is not whispering, I say, even though I know that's exactly what O'Malley does. I listen to everyone. He has good advice.
Oh?
So was it really your idea to have Bishop reconnoiter for spiders?
He noticed the same thing I did.
Is he saying O'Malley manipulates me? That's ridiculous.
Isn't it?
I shake my head. I make the final decisions. I hold up the spear. Because I have this.
Yes, you have the spear. The spear that the god of blood guided into your hands.
He wants to pretend it wasn't the people who voted me leader, but rather the will of his invisible friends. I will never get through to this boy. He is a danger to us, a wedge that can divide us all.
I'm sick of your god talk. Where exactly are your gods anyway? Why don't they just show themselves and help us?
Aramovsky's expression is so condescending, I want to slice it off his face.
Em, how can you be so blind? We traveled on a ship that moved between planets.
We were created in that ship, designed to live on Omeokan, when those that designed us cannot.
We are standing in a city that was made for us. If you need more evidence of the gods, little Matilda, then my spear point at his throat. A blur of motion that my hands perform before my brain even engages.
Don't call me that, I say, my words low and growling.
Don't you ever call me that.
Aramovsky stays very still. He tries to appear unafraid, but the point of my spear is just below his Adam's apple. I could push forward. It would be so easy, and you'd be forever free. And shut him up for good. The same way Bishop shut up Aramovsky's progenitor.
I remember the black body crawling, the broken thigh bone plunging into its back. That sickened me, made me want to run.
A hard shudder shakes me. What am I doing? My temper again. I almost killed this boy. I pull the spear away, set the butt on the floor.
Aramovsky rubs at his throat.
Unless you intend to stab me again, may I go?
I didn't stab you.
I say it sharply, defensively. I feel stupid, clumsy, and out of control.
He lifts his fingers from his throat. They are traced with a thin smear of red.
The god of blood approves, Em.
Get out!
Aramovsky leaves.
I'm sure of it now. He wants to lead.
On his own, if he can, or by controlling me.
Be careful with Aramovsky, O'Malley had said. He's tricky. O'Malley was right about that. But is O'Malley trying to control me just like Aramovsky is? Am I really in charge? Or is O'Malley shaping the way I think? Spingate seemed so upset in the meeting. I'm going to check in on her first. Then I'll find O'Malley. I have to know if he's hiding information from me.
16.
There are little kids everywhere, running around, goofing off, and generally getting in the way. The shuttle is big, but we have far too many bodies in here. I'll find a way to put them all to work. They are even on deck 2, where the labs are. The lab doors are closed. I heard Spingate's voice coming from behind the door of Lab 1. She's yelling at someone. I knock.
Go away, she shouts.
Spin, it's M. A pause. The door slides open. Gaston steps out. He's wide-eyed, frazzled. He closes the door behind him.
Em, save me, he says quietly. She wants help, but the work she's doing is way beyond me. I was trained to fly, not to do biology research. I need to be in the pilot house. I think I've found weapon systems.
My heart surges at this good news.
You mean like bracelets?
He shakes his head.
No. Weapons that are part of the shuttle, that I can use on outside targets, like missiles.
I vaguely know what a missile is. I can't see how it will help us unless he can aim it at a spider. He takes my hand.
Come on, talk to Spingate.
His voice lowers.
And watch out.
Before I can ask him what he means, he pulls me into the lab. The narrow room is white, like Smith's medical room. Cabinets, gear, and devices I don't recognize line the walls. Spingate is staring at something floating above a white pedestal marked with a golden gear symbol.
Hi, Spin, I say. I came to see if there's anything I can do to help.
I doubt it, she says without looking up from her work.
Gaston is already helping me.
The image on the pedestal before her looks like some kind of twisting ladder. Rungs made of different colors. I don't know what it's supposed to be. Until now, every time a puzzle presented itself, Spingate was excited to solve it. Not now. No smile, no giggle, eyes sunken, hair askew. She's frustrated. She stares at the twisted ladder, seems to have already forgotten I'm here. I glance at Gaston. His eyes plead with me. He wants to leave. Partially because he wants to learn more about the shuttle, I know, but more so because of the angry mood that radiates from Spingate. That reminds me, he's the only one who knows how to fly. Maybe I can solve 2 problems at once.
Gaston, can you teach Beckett to fly the shuttle?
He frowns. Why? I know how to do it. Maybe he's still mad that Beckett yelled at him about the food contamination. Or maybe Gaston doesn't want anyone else to know what he knows, so that he continues to be special.
Because if something happens to you, I say, we could be stranded.
He gestures to Spingate. She could fly it herself, with a few more lessons. I could teach... Spingate's eyes snap up. Her lip curls into a sneer.
In case you couldn't tell, I'm busy. Of course I could fly this shuttle, but it would take time to learn. Does it look like I have time?
Gaston backs toward the lab door.
I'll go find Beckett, he says. Orders received and believed, fearless leader.
With that, he's gone. Spingate glares at me.
Gaston needs to be focused on what he's good at, I say. I'll have O'Carrickey and Johnson help you. I'll make it their only job.
She throws up her hands in exasperation.
O'Carrickey and Johnson? Em, they're not gears. They're empties. They're not smart.
Spingate's words trail off. Her glare fades.
I can't believe she just said that.
They're not smart enough, I finish for her, because they're circles. Like me, right?
We made it this far without the symbols affecting us, and the first real division doesn't come from Aramovsky. It comes from Spingate. My friend. Has she always thought of me as stupid?
Em, I... I didn't mean it like that.
Her face is bright red. Her words rush out.
We all have some pre-existing training. Gaston knows how to fly. Bishop knows how to fight. I already know a lot of math and science that only other gears will know. There isn't time to teach these things to someone who doesn't already understand them. Her excuses fall short. I should have known. I probably knew it all along. Spingate is a tooth girl. At her core, she looks down on me because of my symbol, even though she doesn't know why. Maybe that explains my dim memories of school, of the tooth girls making my life miserable. My feelings are hurt, but my feelings don't matter, because she's right. Reality is what it is, whether we like it or not. You need someone who can understand what you're doing, I say. We had the knowledge of a 12-year-old when we woke up. The kids from the Zolotl do, too, right? She nods slowly. Zubiri is smart, I say. Have you met her? I talked to her a little. Good. She and M. Cathcart will assist you with your research. Don't worry. Cathcart is a gear, so I'm sure he won't be too stupid to help. Spingate blinks. M, I was angry before you even came in. I haven't had any sleep. About what I said, it doesn't matter. My eyes sting. I leave before she can see me cry. I've had it with all of this. Our symbols are a simmering poison that will corrupt what we've worked so hard to build. O'Malley knows something about them, and he's going to tell me. 17. I turn the wheel. I open the door. O'Malley pivots to see who has joined them. The image above the pedestals suddenly changes. I don't know what was there a moment ago, but now it's the same thing I saw the last time I was here. Little heads of Aramovsky, O'Malley, and Matilda. O'Malley seems pleased. He probably thinks I came to take him up on that kiss, but only for a moment. The look on my face tells him otherwise. Em, what's wrong? I think he's hiding something, but I'm not sure. My father's voice echoes through my head. Attack, attack, always attack. You lied in the meeting, I say, letting him hear the anger in my soul, even while I hope I'm wrong. You already knew the observatory had power. His mouth twitches, just once. I did, he says. I was right. I don't want to be. I wanted to trust him. Did you remember your access code? He stares for a few seconds, his expression blank and impenetrable. He's weighing his options. Lie, and see if he can get away with it, or tell the truth. I didn't remember it, but I figured it out, he says. I thought maybe my progenitor picked a code of something important from his childhood. I've been working on it since I first found this room. I wait. There is more, and he will tell me. His stone face cracks, shifts to sadness. He looks away. When I was little, I had a kitten, he says. I mean, he had a kitten. White, with a black spot on its face. They made him kill it. The kitten's name was Chromium. I have no idea what to say. I'm excited and jealous that he recalls something from the past. I also feel for him, because it's clear that, although the cat had been dead for 1,000 years and was never really his to begin with, this is a hard thing to remember. Why did they make your creator kill it? He stares at the floor for a moment, then shrugs. I'm not sure, he says. I think they were trying to teach my progenitor something about emotions. What kind of lesson on emotions could be gained from making a little boy kill a kitten? Then I remember who we're talking about. The grown-ups. Compared to what we've seen, making a child murder his pet is nothing. So, that was your access code. Chromium? That and some other numbers and letters, he says. I'm not sure what they mean, or if they are just random stuff. The pig I killed in the garden. It was so hard to take that animal's life. I can't imagine what it must be like to do the same to something you love. How unfair that O'Malley remembers that act when it wasn't even him that did it.
Maybe this is something he needs to talk about. If he wants to talk to me, I will listen. But not now. There are more important things than a dead cat.
We need to know more, I say. Can the pedestals tell us about the city? The mold?
He shakes his head. It looks like most of the information was permanently erased. The grown-ups did that, I think. I don't know why. I was able to see some organizational information. That's how I learned the observatory has power. The observatory. All he had to do was come out and tell us about it. Instead, he wanted us to think that going there was someone else's idea. Attack. Attack.
What do the symbols mean, O'Malley?
His stone face returns.
You don't want to know. Oh, don't I? Now you know what I want.
I know what you need.
How arrogant. My sympathy for the hurt he feels over the cat is fading fast. Out with it. Right now.
He pauses. You've been telling us that we can't afford to be divided against each other, he says.
You're correct. So if I found something the grown-ups did that doesn't apply to us and would upset people, then you're right to say it's best if we leave it alone. Arguing with each other, splitting into factions, that's the fastest way to failure, to disaster. Do we really need things that could divide us? I want all the information I can get, but...
Wait. Wait.
I know we can't afford to be divided, but I never said that. Just like I didn't say anything about looking near the shuttle to see if spiders were close. O'Malley said those things, not me. My anger spikes, but this time I'm ready for it. I shove it down. I set my spear against the wall, reach out and take his hand. He stares at our linked fingers, somewhat surprised. Maybe he's only comfortable with contact if he's the one initiating it. You want people to think your ideas are mine, I say. Why?
His eyes go wide. He's been caught and he knows it. Did he think I wouldn't notice? Did he think I'm stupid? Just an empty?
My training, he says. I know ways to convince people to do things. Ways to make sure everyone thinks the leader knows exactly what's going on. It's bad for people to doubt the leader. As soon as I started helping you, back in the Zolotl, I remembered some of what I learned in school.
He had a flash fire of memories. The same thing happened to Gaston, to Aramovsky, to Bishop and Spingate. I've yet to have mine.
What you did was wrong, I say. Just because you know how to do something doesn't mean you have to do it.
He shrugs. It's how I was trained.
That wasn't you. That was your creator.
He huffs.
Is there really a difference? I remember that kitten. I remember holding it, petting it. I remember how it purred, loving me, trusting me. Right before my hands closed around its tiny neck, I remember it scratching me.
O'Malley seems confused. He slides up the sleeve of his black coveralls, stares at his forearm. He turns his arm this way and that, looking for something.
It scratched me, he says. Really bad. There were scars.
I take his forearm in my hands. My thumbs make slow circles on his skin.
Your progenitor had scars. You were not him. You asked if there was a difference. There is. You don't have to do things like he would have done them. You have a choice. We have a choice. I don't need you to lie for me. We're not going to make the same mistakes our creators made. If people doubt me, that's fine.
You're wrong, he says. If people don't think you know exactly what needs to be done, they'll look for someone who does.
I shrug. Then we'll have another vote and pick another leader. We can't keep secrets from each other.
He laughs, looks away.
That's what you say now.
I cup his face, force him to look at me.
We will not keep secrets. Tell me what the symbols mean.
His eyes plead with me.
Leave it be. This will change everything.
I nod. And we'll handle it.
O'Malley closes his eyes. He slowly tilts forward until his forehead presses against mine. That tiny spot of contact sends a tingle through me. It isn't aggressive, like his kiss. Yet this gentle touch reaches me in a way that kiss never could. He straightens, faces the pedestals.
Shuttle, show her the wheel.
The invisible voice speaks.
Yes, Chancellor.
The little heads above the pedestal blur, then fuzz out. A circle forms, dotted with tiny images around the outer edge. In the circle's center, there is a flat, fat-cheeked, cartoonish face that looks like it was carved into flat stone. Its tongue sticks out. A style of art reminds me of my birth coffin's carvings. That circle of images. I look at the red circle embroidered on the left breast of O'Malley's coveralls. Our ties, I say. That face with the symbols. It matches what was on our ties. O'Malley nods.
It does. But before you ask, I don't know what it means.
He sees my doubtful expression.
I told you information was erased. I know it's hard for you to believe me right now, but that's the truth.
Shuttle, show her the symbols.
Above the pedestal, three glowing dots appear around the circle. At the very top, the dot turns black, spreads out and becomes a symbol. Spingate's gear. The other two form near the bottom, connected to the gear and each other by straight lines that form a perfect triangle. On the left, O'Malley's half-circle. On the right, Aramovsky's double ring. Words appear by each symbol. Spirit, by the double ring. Mind, by the gear. And structure, by the half-circle.
The double ring is obviously religion, O'Malley says. The gear is for scientists and engineers. My symbol represents administration, helping leaders, organizing, managing other people who do actual labor. As far as I can tell, people who had these three symbols worked together to rule, whatever type of culture there was back on the Zolotl. I mean before they started slaughtering each other. Those three symbols were in charge.
But Matilda was the leader. If I'm a circle, wasn't she one too? Circles would have to be in the leadership group, wouldn't they? He doesn't answer. He doesn't want to go on.
Tell me the rest of it, I say.
He clears his throat, speaks loud.
Show the secondary symbols.
Three more dots appear, one each in the spaces between the existing symbols. The dots take shape. Top left, Bishop's circle star. Top right, Smith's circle cross. And at the bottom, finally, my symbol. The empty circle. Words appear. Might, next to the circle star. Health, next to the circle cross. By mine, the word service. O'Malley points to the circle star.
Might means military, soldiers or police, people who protect the order of things.
I think of Bishop and the others, of how they are always the first to face any danger, of how without them, we would all have been overwritten by now.
Soldiers help keep people safe, I say. People who keep us safe would be part of the ruling class.
They aren't.
No hesitation in O'Malley's voice, no doubt.
They did the bidding of the primary symbols.
So grown-up O'Malley would have been in charge of grown-up Bishop?
Interesting.
O'Malley points to the circle cross.
That symbol was for doctors, nurses, people involved in the health of others.
The dead brewer boy in the coffin, he had the circle cross on his forehead. Is Brewer a doctor? Perhaps he was in charge of the receptacles.
That might explain how he had control over our coffins, how he was able to wake us up,
to lock out Matilda and the others for all those centuries. I wait for O'Malley to continue. He doesn't. He looks down, unable to meet my eyes.
Stop stalling, I say. Explain my symbol. What was my role in their society? What special skills am I supposed to have?
He lets out a slow breath. His blue eyes shimmer with tears. Maybe he fakes emotions at will,
but he isn't faking this. Circles don't have special skills, he says. Your role was to do whatever the other symbols told you to do. Em? The circles were slaves. Like a key sliding into a lock. That word destroys barriers in my mind. Matilda's memories, fractured, distorted, but still real, flood in. I am in school, carrying a tooth girl's things for her, while she walks 5 steps ahead of me, laughing with other tooth girls. I am in class, no, waiting outside of class, with other circles, being taught basic math by an old woman, while my tooth girl, my owner, is in the classroom learning physics. I am in the cafeteria, on my knees, wiping food off the floor, food that my owner knocked over just so she could see me pick it up, while she and her tooth girl friends laugh at me, call me a stupid empty, over and over again. I am in a small room in a church, where every person I see is a circle, except for the pastor, a woman in red robes with a double ring on her forehead, who was saying that service is the life the gods planned for us, and that if we do it well, if we serve, if we obey, then we will be rewarded after death when we go to the Black Mountain. I am outside the church, talking to an older circle boy, while I wait for my owner to finish her own service in a church that is far more beautiful than mine, and the boy looks around carefully before he asks if I've ever heard of the god called Tlaloc, the one who can empower the soldiers and doctors and workers to rise up against the rulers. The feeling of anger, of humiliation, of hatred, at belonging to someone else, at having no rights, the need to do something about it, anything, no matter what the cost. Em? O'Malley is staring at me. Em, are you all right? No, I'm not. I finally had that moment I wanted, that flash fire, just like my friends had. Gaston gets to fly, and I get this? I share my creator's memories. For the most part, I am those memories. Matilda didn't wear chains. She didn't live in squalor, but she was a slave nonetheless. She was property. On the Zolotl, it seemed like Matilda was in charge, I say. How could a slave be in charge? Because she led a rebellion. The details of it are erased, but I'm pretty sure she started the war on that ship. I thought she was a monster inside and out. Maybe things aren't so simple, so cut and dried. All those mutilated bodies, the butchered babies. Only someone who is pure evil could do that. And yet a part of me, the part of me that is her, perhaps, understands why she would start that war. She didn't want to be a slave, I say. She didn't want anyone to be a slave. For the first time, I truly understand my creator. O'Malley gently grips my shoulders. Now you know why we can't tell the others. We have to. My voice is thin, drained of life. Everyone wants to know what the symbols mean. He cups my face in his hands, doing to me what I did to him only moments ago. Em, please. I was trained to counsel leaders, how to know what people are thinking, and how to make sure the leaders say the right thing at the right time. If we share the meaning of the symbols now, it will destroy everything we've accomplished. I know I should tell everyone, but I don't want to. A slave? That's all I was? But no, that wasn't me. It was Matilda. Omeokan is a new world. It is our world. We can make it whatever we want it to be. My people can handle this news. They can make the right decision and not be ruled by the structures of our history. They need to know, I say. We have to be honest. O'Malley shakes his head in exasperation. All right. They need to know, fine. But not now. Aramovsky is just waiting for the right opportunity to call a new election. Do you want to take the chance that he'll win? I think of Aramovsky, talking about his god of blood. So many young minds on this shuttle now. If he could say whatever he wanted, he might corrupt them all. O'Malley is right. Aromovsky can't be in charge now. It would be a disaster. But we will tell them, right? Now I am the one with the pleading tone in my voice. I have never sounded less like a leader. We'll tell them soon. O'Malley pulls me in and holds me tight. I let him. We will, Em. I promise. We'll tell everyone about our past. But after we've secured our future. There is nothing arrogant about him now. Nothing expected from this hug. I need him to hold me. So he does. I will tell everyone. I will. Just not now.
18. The sun hangs low in the sky. Bishop has not returned. I sit alone atop the pile of vines at the landing pad's edge. The pad is alive with activity, as I have put everyone to work. Under the direction of Opkick, kids are chopping vines and clearing them away from the pad's metal deck. They toss the cut pieces onto the vine wall, making it thicker and taller. If the spiders stay at street level, they can't see the shuttle. Maybe they have other ways of detecting us, sound or smell perhaps, but we're out of sight, and that's something. The kids doing the clearing work are mostly circles. That's because most of us are circles. 6 teenagers have that symbol. 52 of the Zolotl kids. All 168 kids that were stored on the shuttle. In total, circles make up 3/4 of our population. I watch them, and I can't stop thinking. Clearing away unwanted plants is the kind of work a slave would do. From here, I can see so much of the city. Not far enough to spot Bishop somewhere off to the east. But if a spider tries to come this way, I'll have plenty of time to call out a warning and get everyone back inside the shuttle. I'm worried about Bishop, Bawden, and Viska. There is nothing I could do to help them. The observatory has power. Does that mean people are there? People who could hurt my friends? I need to see Bishop again, if only just to lay eyes on him. Spingate has shown her true feelings. O'Malley plays mind games. Gaston is busy teaching Beckett how to fly, and Aromovsky is a constant threat. Bishop is the only person I can count on. The city is still, hot, no breeze. Sweat mats my hair to my head, yet the black suit keeps the rest of my body perfectly cool. I don't know how that's possible. The grown-ups knew so much about so many things. If we solve the food problem, rediscovering their knowledge will be a high priority. I wait. I stare. I don't see Bishop. I don't see our exploring teams either. Coyotl, Okariki, Cabral, and Aromovsky each lead 3 Circle Star kids, searching nearby buildings. They are all close enough to come running if I sound an alarm. So far, they have found only empty buildings. Borjigin, Ingolfsson, and D'Souza are moving contaminated food into a single storage room. Easier to guard that way. I didn't want to risk the younger kids doing that job, for fear they might ignore my warnings and sneak some of the bad food for themselves. Borjigin is a half, like Opkick, like O'Malley, and naturally took charge of the operation. Part of me waited for Ingolfsson or D'Souza, both circles, to push back, to tell Borjigin to stop being so bossy. But they didn't. Are they working hard because that's what has to be done? Or because they were created to follow orders? I just can't get it out of my head. I wish I could deny it, but O'Malley's information opened up just enough of Matilda's memories for me to know the truth. She was born a slave. Is that why she led the rebellion on the Zolotl? To free herself? To free her kind? But if so, then why did all the dead people we saw have the same symbol as her? The same symbol as me? The setting sun casts a warm light on Farrar, and the 30-odd young circle stars that aren't exploring. They are arranged in formation, Farrar facing them. He squats, yells, and punches a big fist straight out into the air while tucking his other tight against his body. He yells again. The fists change position, over and over. The children match his sounds and motions. While the slaves cut and haul, while the halves organize and the gears study. The soldiers drill. Something tells me this is the way things were for a long time, even before the Zolotl left whatever planet it came from. All the buildings cast lengthening shadows, but one shadow stretches farther and faster, gobbling up the buildings before it. The big ziggurat blocks out the light long before night completely falls. Bishop is somewhere in that shadow. Is he injured? Is he dead? My chest hurts when I think about that. What if he needs help? Omeokan's two moons slowly reveal themselves. The explorer teams stop searching. Cabral and Okariki smile and wave at me as they return to the shuttle with their young Circle Star helpers. Aramovsky completely ignores me, as do the kids on his team. Koyoto sends his kids into the shuttle, then sits down next to me. He's filthy. In addition to his thigh bone, he carries a crowbar he got from the storeroom. "We didn't find anything," he says. "We searched 20 buildings, total. A few were open, but most," he wiggles the crowbar, "we had to break into. Nothing in any of them. No people, no furniture, no power, nothing. Sorry, Em."
"Why are you apologizing? You looked, and now we know more than we did before."
He thinks on this, shrugs. "We should at least go back to the ramp," he says. "I'll sit with you if you want."
"I would like that." The landing pad was full of activity. Now it is empty.
The newly cleared metal, dully reflecting the light of two moons. We climb the ramp, then sit on the metal platform, our legs dangling off the edge. Together, Coyotl and I watch darkness claim the city. The smell of mint is strong from all the cut vines. We watch the stars come out. I wonder if one of them is the Zolotl. I notice him looking at me.
Oh no, not him too.
"Coyotl, you're not going to try to kiss me, are you?" The redhead gives me a wry smile. "You're very nice, Em, but you're not really my type. I was looking at your spear." My grip tightens on my weapon.
"Why?"
"Because it looks dull." He reaches into one of his coveralls, many pockets, and pulls out a rectangular gray stone. He raises it up to show me, then draws his knife from its sheath and holds it flat against his thigh. He slides the stone against the blade slowly, methodically, again and again. After a time, he holds the knife up so I can see it. Moonlight plays brightly along the silvery edge.
"Feel how sharp this is? But don't slide your hand down it," he says. "Drag your thumb against it, like this."
He gently pulls the pad of his thumb perpendicular against the blade, then offers the knife to me, hilt first. I use my thumb as he did. The blade feels very sharp. I hand him back the knife. He reaches into his bag and produces a second stone, which he passes to me. It takes me a few tries to position the long spear in a way where I can slide the stone against the blade. It makes a small grinding noise when I do. Koyoro smiles and nods.
"That's it. He didn't want to kiss me. He didn't want my spear. He just wanted my spear to be sharp."
Together, we slide stones across steel. 10 strokes. 100. Slow and steady. My world narrows to the stone, the metal. He stops.
"I know you and Aramovsky are fighting."
His words pull me out of it. I realize that when I sharpen the spear, I'm not thinking of anything else. In a way, I guess doing this gave my mind a break. I feel more relaxed now.
"We're not fighting," I say. "We have different ideas. We're trying to figure out the best way to take care of everyone."
Koyoto thinks on this for a minute. He nods, goes back to sharpening.
"That's good," he says. "Because this place, I love Omeokan, but it's..."
He stops and looks at me.
"It's scary."
It is at that. I nod. He smiles wide, like I have just helped him with a big problem.
"Aramovsky helps me not be afraid," he says. "There's a lot of us who are afraid. He talks to us, tells us that the gods will protect us."
I again put the stone to my spear. I sharpen. I think.
"Aramovsky is helping people? He's trying to turn people against me. Could it be both things at once? I think of what he said to me in the pilot house. He seems so genuine, so sincere. Maybe he's talking nonsense, but he believes that nonsense. The scrape of stone on metal chases away my thoughts. I lose myself in the task. I don't know how much time has gone by when Coyote stands suddenly, staring out toward the vine wall. I look and see nothing. The only light comes from the shuttle behind us. My imagination turns the city's deep shadows into creeping spiders. What is it? I ask quietly. Do you see?
Shh.
He leans forward slightly, peering. He smiles.
They've returned.
The shadows move, take shape. Bishop, Visca, Bawden. Long vines are wrapped around their black coveralls. They look like part of the landscape, even though they're running. Standing still, they would be invisible. As they draw closer, I see their faces, covered in plant juice and dirt. Coyote runs down the ramp, feet hammering on the metal. Bishop is right. He is noisy. Coyote meets them halfway. His left hand goes to Bishop's right shoulder. Bishop's left hand goes to Coyote's right. Coyote repeats the greeting with the other circle stars. There is something formal about the motion, and also something deeply emotional. None of the other symbols do that. In many ways, the circle stars are a people unto themselves. Coyote and Bawden enter the shuttle, leaving me with Bishop and Visca. Welcome back, I say to them. I was so worried about Bishop. Now that he's back, I feel exhausted. I just want to sleep. We saw spiders, he says. They stay still and hidden, mostly. We couldn't get a good look at them. We saw some lurking around a strange building near the observatory. I think it's their nest. We had to go all the way around so the spiders couldn't see us, and approach the observatory from the far side. Visca shifts from foot to foot, so excited he can't stand still. Even with the coating of dirt and gunk, his skin is so much paler than Bishop's. Some of my training came back to me, Visca says. I know tracking, even better than Bishop does. I remember how Bishop tracked the pig back on the Zolotl. I don't think the spiders hear very well, Visca says. When we decided to take the long way around, we didn't see any sign of them. No tracks, no broken vines, nothing. We can take that same path tomorrow and avoid the spiders completely, I bet. I look at Bishop. He nods in agreement. The observatory is big, he says. It's cold at the top. We could see the entire city. The landing pad, the shuttle, the city wall, the jungle and the ruins. Everything looks so small. What about other people? Anything moving? No, Bishop says. We saw maybe 4 different spiders inside the city limits. When we got up high on the observatory, we could see over the city walls. We saw more spiders moving through the ruins. 4 of them inside the walls, and more in the jungle? I had held out hope there was just one spider. So many. We could never stand up to that many. Gaston thinks the wall goes all around the city, I say. Does it? Bishop nods. Except for the river that leads to the waterfall. There is a gap in the wall where the river flows in from the jungle. Past the wall, there's nothing but ruins and jungle, in all directions. I'm not sure what I was hoping for. Valleys and fields? Forests? Maybe another city like ours? Far off? A city that wasn't abandoned? Bishop seems uncomfortable. He has more bad news. Tell me, I say. What else did you see? Visca stops shuffling. He looks down. Whatever he saw disturbed him. Bishop takes in a slow breath, lets it out even slower. There were pictures carved into the observatory walls, he says. They showed people who looked so real I would have thought they could talk to us. Some of the carvings were of people killing each other. It reminded me of all the bodies on the Zolotl. If the images disturb Bishop this much, they must be awful. You didn't get inside, though? He shakes his head. At the very top, there were lights, he says. Small lights, so small you can't see them from here. Gaston is right. The building has power. It's not Gaston who is right. It's O'Malley. No use in explaining that now. I don't know what good that does us, I say.
If we can't get in, what's the point?
Bishop's jaw muscles twitch.
I think we can. There's a pillar at the top, with all the symbols on it. Each symbol is big, taller than I am. The gear symbol is at the bottom. In the empty space inside the gear, there's a handprint, and on the palm, a golden double circle.
Damn. If we want to enter the observatory, we'll need Aramovsky to get us in.
Part 3. Legacies and Language. 19. The observatory is massive. The vine-covered ziggurat rises into the afternoon sky, enormous layers of stacked stone, one on top of the next. If a giant hand turned it upside down, I bet most of the city could fit inside it, as if the other buildings were nothing more than a collection of pebbles. The Zolotl was huge, so large I couldn't really process it. But this is different. That was in space. That was, well, it wasn't real. The observatory sits on solid ground. If this is a testimony to what the grown-ups can do, I am so grateful they are not here. Bishop, O'Malley, Aramovsky, Spingate, Visca, and I made good time. We left at sunrise. It is now a few hours past midday. Visca's roundabout path took us south, then west, then south again, then west again, adding several hours to the trip. But we saw no sign of spiders. We'll follow that same path back, which means we'll get home well after sunset. Once we enter the observatory, if we can enter, every minute we spend inside is another minute of darkness on our return. I brought O'Malley because I need him. Manipulator or not, the shuttle recognizes him as a chancellor. Any system still working in the observatory might do the same. Spingate insisted on coming, saying she had exhausted the capabilities of the shuttle's tiny lab. Either she gets more information somewhere else, or she won't be able to stop the red mold. We think we need Aramovsky to get in. As for Bishop, I wouldn't even consider making this trip without him. That left Gaston as the main person I could trust. He's in charge of the shuttle while we're gone. Borjigin and Opkik are helping him. The towering observatory is so big, it hurts to think about it. We count 30 layers, one on top of the other. The base layer itself is taller than most of the city's buildings, and so wide and long, 100 smaller pyramids could easily fit on it. There is something solemn about this monument that touches the sky. Something frightening. I wonder if Aramovsky can comfort me and take away my fears the way he comforts Coyotl. If this place doesn't have answers, we have no choice but to go beyond the wall. Somewhere on this planet there is food for my people. I will find it. If I have to track down the fire builders and take food away from them, I will. Wide steps run up the ziggurat's south face. At the top, faint and faded at this distance, I see the last layer and its pillar of 6 symbols glimmering in the sunlight. 25 layers up, I can just make out that big vine-covered statue we saw on the pilot house map. Spingate's head is tilted so far back, she seems to be staring straight up.
I can't believe this, she says. To build such a thing. The grown-ups are amazing.
Aramovsky nods. Before he can mutter some nonsense about gods, I speak.
We can believe it, because it's right there in front of us, I say. Save your disbelief for things we can't see.
I meant that as a dig on Aramovsky. He doesn't seem to notice. So many vine-choked steps. My legs ache just looking at them. It will take us hours to reach the top.
We're wasting daylight, Aramovsky says.
He's right. I take a last deep breath, resigning myself to the work that lies before us.
Bishop, I say, take us up.
He and Visca lead the way. With vines wrapped around their black uniforms, they look like shadows moving across the yellow leaves that blanket the ziggurat's orange-brown stone. Spingate, O'Malley, Aramovsky, and I stand out more. We should wrap ourselves in vines, too. Maybe later. Vines would add weight,
and this damn spear will be heavy enough by the time we're done. The steps are wide but thin and painfully steep. I have to raise my knee almost parallel to the ground to move from one to the next. I'm careful, as more often than not, my foot lands on leaves and vines that want to squish out from under when I put my weight on them. The stone beneath is unforgiving. Even a short fall could break bones. I count as I climb. The ziggurat's bottom layer has 100 steps. By the time I reach the first plateau, my legs are already screaming. 29 layers to go. My eyes trace the steps that lead to the second plateau. Yep, another 100. At the 95th, Bishop stops and turns to me. "Em, don't be afraid of what you'll see next. The woman is just a carving." We take the last 5 steps, side by side. I reach the second plateau and am grateful for his warning. A snarling woman in red robes is carved into the wall at the base of the ziggurat's third layer. Vines on either side of her, held apart like drawn curtains. Bishop must have tied them off. A vine-covered block of stone sits in front of her. She's plunging a knife down. She looks so real. Bishop nods toward the woman. "When we came up, we thought we saw something behind the vines. It was her." Some of her color has chipped or flaked away, but if I had just glanced, I would have thought she was moving, thought she was alive. The woman has a double ring on her forehead. I walk to the block. Through the vines covering it, I see a carved man on his back, hands chained to the block's sides. The two images are meant to be viewed together. The red-robed woman driving a knife into his chest. The man's face is forever frozen into a twisted mask of pain and terror. A vine covers his forehead. I push it aside. His symbol is a half circle. "There's more carvings," Bishop says. "All the way up, on every plateau. We didn't look at many. After the first few, well, we stopped looking at anything but our feet." Aramovsky walks to the carving. He runs his fingers down the woman's robes, as if they were cloth instead of stone. "This is important," he says. He closes his eyes. His brow furrows. I think back to when O'Malley told me I was a slave, how it felt to have blocked memories suddenly flare to life. Aramovsky's eyes open wide. "Ritual," he says. "The god of blood demands ritual." That is Aramovsky's important word, his cloud cover, his microorganisms. I feel O'Malley looking at me. He stares hard, his message clear. "I told you Aramovsky is a problem. Now he's going to be even worse." "Let's go," I say. "We don't have time to look at stupid art. Let's climb." At the 10th plateau, we are already exhausted. We're higher than most of the surrounding buildings, yet there are still 20 plateaus before we reach the top, and we thought walking uphill on the Zoloto was bad. Every level has more images, all somehow worse than the level below. Red-robed, double-ring priests cutting hearts from the chests of living people, throwing the bodies down the observatory steps. Severed limbs arranged into patterns, like the pinwheel of arms we saw up on the Zoloto. People with their hands chained above their heads, shot repeatedly with arrows, their blood draining into troughs that channel it to stone bowls carved into the terrace. Those images alone are disturbing enough. Then I notice actual stone bowls beneath the vines at our feet, waiting to be filled with blood. Scenes of two people fighting, one armed with a sword and protected by brightly colored armor, while the other is naked, holding only a small knife, or sometimes just a pointed stick. People pinned on their backs by bars like the ones that held me in my birth coffin. One robed priest holding their jaws open, another pouring liquid down their throat. People being burned alive. People being skinned. Every level holds images of torture, terror, and death. Was this what the grown-ups wanted? A world of murder and human sacrifice? We are all horrified. All, except Aramovsky. We reach the 25th plateau.
The tall statue is there, still looking up toward the ziggurat peak. Even this close, I can't make out if it's a man or a woman, not with so many vines hanging all over it. We need a rest. I tell everyone to sit in the statue's shade. My legs tremble. They moved past simple pain, 3 or 4 levels back. Now they are numb. I can only imagine how badly they will ache tomorrow. O'Malley, Spingate, and I are drained, to the point I'm not sure we can make it to the last 5 levels. Visca and Bishop look tired, but can clearly keep going. Where does their strength and endurance come from? Spingate and I rest with our backs against the base of the statue. O'Malley lies flat on his stomach. Aramovsky, somehow, is still moving, looking at carvings with wonder. Bishop and Visca sit on the steps, staring out across the city. They don't want to see any more of the horrors. These top layers are just as thick as those on the bottom, 100 steps each, but are increasingly smaller in width. It would have taken us hours to walk all the way around the base. We could walk around the 25th layer's thin plateau in only a couple of minutes. Everyone is still except for Aramovsky. He's just as exhausted as I am, I'm sure of it, but you never know by his expression. Every new image makes his face blaze with reverence. He's running his hands over a carving that shows 2 red-robed people, a man and a woman, using stone blades to scrape the skin off a little girl. The child's agonized, terrified face is so real, I can almost hear her screams. For a moment, I think I shouldn't have brought him. But we probably can't get inside without him. I had no choice. I notice that Spingate is watching him. She's getting angry. She stands, walks over to him.
You like that?
I hear the threat in her voice. Aramovsky doesn't. He answers without turning around.
It's beautiful. This had to be carved by hand. And how did the artists make the rock different colors?
Artists, Spin says, spitting the word out like it's made of poison. There's something wrong with you, Aramovsky. I always knew there was, but this proves it.
He turns to face her. If he didn't hear her tone, he can see her body language. Fists clenched at her sides, shoulders forward. I'm behind her. I can't see her eyes, but I know they are narrowed to slits.
There's nothing wrong with me, he says.
I don't know why you'd say that.
She points at the image of the girl, at the girl's forehead.
That's a tooth girl being butchered. Is that why you like it? Or because the 2 people skinning her are double rings like you?
I glance at the forehead symbols of the carved people, see that she's right. Spingate takes a step toward him. I see Bishop and Visca rise, watching carefully. O'Malley lifts up one elbow.
Give it a rest, Spin, he says. Aramovsky didn't make this place.
She takes another step closer. Aramovsky takes a step away, unsure of what's happening. A second step away puts his back up against the very carving he so admires. Spingate closes the distance. I realize all at once that she's going to hit him. He could crush her if he wanted to, but that doesn't matter. A fight could easily result in someone tumbling down the steps, or worse, rolling off the edge to the hard stone below. I scramble to my feet and run to them.
Spin, take it easy, I say. Like O'Malley said, Aramovsky had nothing to do with making these carvings.
She whirls, fists clenched, eyes blazing with hatred. She hoped this building might bring answers, but it is nothing more than a temple of nightmares.
He'll do the same to us, she says. Mark my words, Em. Aramovsky will...
She glances above me as her voice trails off. Then she looks at me again. The expression on her face, it's like a dagger through my heart. She's terrified. I reach out for her. She flinches. I let my hand drop to my side.
Spin, what's wrong? You don't think I'd let Aramovsky do something to you, do you? I wouldn't let anyone hurt you.
Aramovsky starts to laugh. The deep sound makes my skin crawl. He slowly claps his hands, absolutely delighted.
Some things you let happen, Em, he says. Some things you can't stop.
because they are your destiny.
He points up at the statue.
I turn and look up, raising a hand to block the sun. And then, I see why Spingate is so afraid. There are only a few vines hanging from the statue's head. I can see the face. A face that is unmistakable. Because it is mine.
20. I stare until my eyes water. It's me.
Me?
No, it's Matilda. Or it would be if she took over my body. All the horror that decorates this monstrosity of a building. All the promises of death and carnage, and hearts ripped from chests and tossed down steep stone steps.